Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Glad to be here. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon, and we're talking about one of your favorite topics with Hilmer, rapamycin.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I am a firm believer in human freedom. Every single human being is entitled to live their life as they choose. And, you know, I carry this over into things that some people get quite upset about. For instance, we had one of our transsexual employees recently, who was concerned about coming out in public. And I had to warn or tell this person, look, everybody knows you're transsexual. You know, it's not a secret. We are not blind and we are not stupid. We know, you know, that you are living a different lifestyle than the rest of us. But your lifestyle, your choices, your self-perception are not my business. You know, be the best version of you that you can be. And if you're my employee, I only have one concern. How well do you do your job? Your personal life is your personal life, and it's none of my damn business. So, you know, you don't have to tell me about it. In fact, I prefer you didn't, because it's your private business. I believe the same thing about how we take care of ourselves physically and mentally. You do what you think you should do for your body. And I get a little irritated when politicians and government agencies accrue to themselves the so-called right to tell you how to live your life and what you can and cannot put in your body. Now, I agree there are some really stupid things that you can do, but there are also some very smart things you can do. And I have no patience with politicians and bureaucrats who think that they have the right to control you or me. We are free human beings. And, you know, what I want from most of my government is protect my borders. Don't let me get invaded. Provide the most basic stuff that we have to have, you know, roads, electricity, mail, that sort of thing. And, yeah, and stay the hell out of my life the rest of the time.
Exactly. Yep. Yep.
So, anyway.
There you go, Hilmer.
I got one more thing I want to put into Dr. Mixon's mind, and it's a drug called, I just found out about it, it's called Rilmenidine. It's a prescription medication for treatment of hypertension. It also has the same effect of tricking your body, thinking that it's starving, and so it's an anti-aging drug. And I bet before Monday you'll be on it. It's
Rilmenidine, and it's Rilmenidine, and yes. I know the drug well.
So. Oh, I'm not surprised, but. Okay, and then what about it? What about it? Come on, let's hear it.
Well, and it's for hypertension, right? Or hypertension.
Yes, yeah, right, yeah.
But who cares about that? We're talking about anti-aging here.
Well, I know, but it hits the imidazoline receptors in the body. And It probably is going to be fairly useful. It's centrally active. It lowers blood pressure. It dilates blood vessels, which means it increases blood supply to your brain, to your muscles, to your heart, to your kidneys. And, you know, those are all good things. It also seems to have some mild sirtuin 1 inhibition effect. So in that respect, it's somewhat similar in some of its chemical compound or chemical activities to the rapamycin, because they
and
both
metformin, right?
And metformin, yes. There's a fair number of drugs now we know that impact the sirtuin systems, and that if they suppress sirt 1 or activate sirt 6, they tend to have improved lifespan. So. Mm-hmm. But it's not a drug that I am using. It's a drug that I'm, you know, peripherally aware of. I've read a couple of articles about it, and I will keep my eyes open so that if any really cutting edge studies get published that tell me that this is something I ought to use, then I'll be looking at it a lot harder.
Yeah. Okay. But in the meantime, all right. Rapamycin and metformin. Okay, so
right now, that's my. Yeah, rapamycin, metformin, and either quercetin or, what is the other one?
Berberine?
No. Fisetin.
Resveratrol?
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Fisetin, I'm taking that. Yeah, I'm doing that. I do quercetin and fisetin every day.
And they do very similar things. And so I have mostly just used the quercetin, but you can use the quercetin or the fisetin or the combination. So they all tend to decrease the incidence of senescence in your cells, and to some degree lower your senescent load. So,
all right.
So, do you take any holidays? I mean, do you take any time off, or do you just go constantly once a week?
I go constantly once a week, unless something happens and I'm out gallivanting around the world and I didn't take enough of stuff with me. So,
okay. All right.
Okay. All right.
Checking in. So, anyway. All right. Thanks for that.
You're welcome, sir. Take care.
Yep. Lots of good information there. Thank you for the call, Hilmer. We are going to jump right back into calls. Real quick, though, we have something going on at Longevity we want to make you aware of. It is Heart Health Month in the month of May, and we are just a few days away from that. So we have a Heart Health Day coming up at all three of our Longevity clinics. And this is happening on Thursday, May 9th, all day long. But we need to get you in for an appointment. And Dr. Mixon, could you tell us what they'll be doing for this Heart Health Day? What are we looking at?
Well, we're looking at a Cambridge heart scan study. Basically, that it takes, instead of just giving you your total cholesterol, your HDL and your LDL, it breaks the LDL and the HDL down into three subfractions each. It turns out that some of these with larger particle sizes or smaller particle sizes have very different effects on the body. Hmm. Not all LDL is bad. Not all LDL or not all HDL is good. And so we are looking at the numbers and the ratios and the particle sizes in far more detail than is normally done. We're also looking at your lipoprotein A and lipoprotein B, one of which the A is a genetic factor. The B is a independent risk factor for developing cardiovascular disease. And then we also are measuring some chemicals in your bloodstream that are actually released from plaque in your arteries. As plaques are fresh, new plaques that are not much of a risk put out different chemicals than moderate plaques or severe plaques. Old severe plaques that are firmly or are significantly inflamed and at high risk of rupturing and causing a stroke and a heart attack put out different chemicals than the mild plaques. So we're actually measuring the chemical components kicked out by the plaque in your arteries that may predispose you to strokes and heart attacks. So these are some lab work on your lipid fractions that are much more precise and detailed than you would normally get from your doctor who's just checking your
Your numbers.
Yeah, just
right?
Your cholesterol numbers.
Okay.
We're looking at it much more detail, much more precise risk factors. And that's about, $300, I think, is the test.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you want, you can also do our hormonal panel, mm-hmm. that 70-page printout that will talk about all your other age-related risk factors, your risk of diabetes, dementia, heart attack, strokes, cancers, etc. And then if you decide to become a patient, the $300 you put into that cardiac panel will go towards your fees for Longevity Medical Clinic.
Wonderful.
So that if you become a patient, that panel becomes effectively free for you.
That's good. That's good. All right. So we're making this available to all of our listeners, not just longevity patients. And it's happening on Thursday, May 9th. It's Heart Health Day. And Dr. Mixon, if somebody out there is going, you know, I wanted to get that health analysis done as well, is this a good time to schedule it?
Yes, we can do the whole thing. You get your health analysis. If you do all of the labs that are available and the health analysis, you get scheduled for an hour and a half with a doctor.
Yes.
So a full 90-minute visit in which you really have the time to get your questions answered and decide if Longevity Medical Clinic is the place for you.
Yes. So important. We talk about the health analysis each week, and this would be good to do at the same time. Come in for a blood draw, meet our staff, see our beautiful facilities at Longevity, and let's get you started on knowing what you're at risk for so that you can make healthier decisions and get your life going in a better direction, because we want you to be stronger,
faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, and of course, happier.
Absolutely. Here is the number to call to make your appointment for the Heart Health Day, May 9th at any of our locations, Tacoma, Linwood, and in Kirkland. That number is 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. That's also the number you can call to schedule your free health analysis appointment. And you can do that with your blood test, with your heart health test, or you can schedule it any other time as well. Very important. You can pick the day and the time that works best for you for that health analysis. That number again is 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. You can also go to our website, which is lmclinic.com. All right, back to the phones, Dr. Mixon. Let's head over to Bellevue. Daniel is on the line. Good morning, Daniel. Thank you for waiting.
Hello, Daniel.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
I was just curious, you're talking about the chemicals that the plaque releases that you look for in the lab tests. What are those chemicals or the tests?
Well, the tests are, they're simply included in our cardiac profile. And, you know, this is actually Dr. Umat's forte. So she will be able to give you far more detail about the chemical releases from each of the forms of the plaque. I am just aware that there are, as the plaque forms and as it matures, the inflammatory products released from that plaque are changing. And the thicker and more inflamed the plaque becomes, the more robust the chemical production, and it tends to change in nature. So by measuring those byproducts of the plaque, they can actually tell you how close the plaques in your arteries are to being at risk of imminent rupture. So, you know, it's one of those things that there's a nomogram that they can actually follow and see where you are on that nomogram.
Okay, that's caught my curiosity there. And then I'm doing a heart MRI today with contrast, and I have a lab work scheduled next Tuesday at Longevity. Is that contrast going to throw anything off, like kidney or anything? Should I maybe reschedule a week later, or you think I'll be okay?
Depends on which contrast they're using. They're not doing kidney studies on you. They're just doing an MRI of your heart?
Correct. But I was just kidney came to mind with the contrast. Yeah. I just thought I'd throw that at you.
Yeah. I'm not aware of a direct impact, but I'll tell you, just be safe. I'd put it off 1 week just to make sure everything has cleared your system. Because I hate to warn you that, you know, your kidney function looks kind of odd, you know, and then have to go back and redo your kidney studies, when all we really have to do is wait a week before we do your study to be safe.
Okay, great. I'm glad I asked. And then, sorry, the reason I called in, I was interested about your opinion on the NAD I don't think you guys carry that, but
we actually
I got it from Thorne.
Yeah.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. Thorne's a good company. Yeah, hang on a second. We've got it. I've just gotten a signal that we're supposed to be taking a break.
Yeah.
But you sit tight, and I'll come back, and we'll talk about NAD, the NAD precursors, and which ones I like to use and why, okay?
Very good. Taking a quick break. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We're going to talk about NAD and REM and bioidentical hormones. The next few calls right here on Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Good morning. My name is Lynette, here with Dr. Jerry Mixon, talking about all sorts of things this morning. But right now, we are discussing NAD with Daniel from Bellevue.
Okay. All right. You still there, Daniel?
Yes. I am, yeah.
What did you want to know about NAD?
Well, so I started taking it. I just kind of wanted to. I don't know a lot about it. That's when calling you, but I tried it with Thorne and kind of like perhaps an energy thing, and I take a lot of other supplements, so it took me a little bit to figure out what was causing all this energy, but I feel like I got this crazy good energy. Just
okay,
I just wanted to work out and get things done, and which is, I'm thinking maybe this is how normal people feel. They have all this great energy. It just could be a life-changing thing, maybe. Maybe I could even give up caffeine. The downside was it kind of made me anxious, almost like it was too much. And with the anxious, I thought I was maybe not thinking quite as clearly or focused. But I did really like the energy, so I thought maybe there's something to this that I need to keep pursuing.
Okay, well, let's talk about this. NAD stands for nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide.
Wow, I'm glad you go by NAD.
Right. And it is a coenzyme that is used by the mitochondria to produce the energy that keeps you alive, okay? The mitochondria are the little energy-producing cells in our body. And this is a coenzyme that basically allows the sugar, the glucose, that you make out of your food, you know, you break your carbohydrates down, you release glucose. The glucose is carried into the cell by the insulin. It makes its way to the mitochondria, and the NAD is one of the coenzymes that helps to carry it through that double membrane of the mitochondria and get it inside where it can actually then be burned and to generate the energy we need to stay alive and moving. As we age, one of the changes that occur is that we make less NAD. Now, NAD is the chemical we actually want in our cells. Some people don't absorb it well, and so for some people, they get nauseated, they get diarrhea because it actually overstimulates their bowel, it seems. And at times, it's in short supply. So, we have a supply of it on hand. We sell to our patients on a regular basis because it is a common issue with aging. There are alternatives. You can use nicotinamide riboside, or you can use nicotinamide mononucleotide. That's NMN. And any or all of those, your body will convert to the NAD, and the NAD in turn will help move that glucose, that sugar into the cells to be, or into the mitochondria to be burned. So it is an important enzyme. It is an enzyme that we have less and less of as we age. And, substitution with either NMN or nicotinamide riboside or NAD directly, any or all of those supplements work just fine. Does that answer your question?
And do you think I'm just... Yeah, that's very helpful. Do you think maybe with the anxiety I was feeling. I mean, I love the energy, but you think maybe I just taking too much probably? Or
yes. Yeah. That's probably all it is. You know, you've got a balance. Life, the proper dose of anything is just enough to do the job. And anytime you got more than enough to do the job, we start increasing the downsides, the negative effect. This is not just in your muscles, your skin, your heart, your lungs, your kidneys. It's in your brain, too. And so when you overstimulate the energy production of some of those neurons, anxiety, stress reactions, palpitations, tremors, these are all possible side effects of boosting your NAD a little too high.
Okay. I'm pretty sure I called Friday and asked the store, and they said they didn't carry anything, your store, and also I didn't see anything online. Are you just maybe out of it? Or
yeah, maybe, or sometimes we go in and out of that, but I know we've usually got the nicotinamide riboside if we don't have the NAD, and they both work perfectly well. I actually was wandering through there a week or so ago, and I saw several big boxes of NAD. So, but maybe they weren't out at the clinic itself. Maybe they were just here in the storeroom and had not been distributed to the clinics yet.
Okay. Because I know you have high-quality supplements, so I'll follow up on that. Maybe trying a different brand might help. And then,
But Thorne does good work, too. So I'm not, you know, if you're buying Thorne's, I don't get excited.
There you go.
Yeah. And then
all right, Daniel, we're going to have to move on to some more calls. Is that all right?
Got more people waiting, but thank you for your call.
Yeah, sorry for all the questions. Thank you so much.
You're welcome,
Daniel.
Sir. Bye-bye.
Thank you for calling. Leading Edge Medicine continues with your concerns about your health, about aging, and questions about what's going on. Dr. Mixon, help me. Here's that number to call, 800-465-8770. And in Tumwater, we have Ursula on the line. Hi, Ursula.
Hello, Ursula.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, dear. How can we help?
Okay, my granddaughter was, I think it was last year, she was diagnosed with REM, sleep behavioral disorder. Uh-huh. And the neurologist at that time told her that in about 12 years, she has an 80% chance of developing Parkinson's.
Oh, dear.
And that's really concerning. I was just wondering if that really was the correct diagnosis.
Well, I have not examined or even interviewed your granddaughter, so I can't tell you whether or not it was the correct diagnosis. You know, REM sleep disorder, the REM stands for rapid eye movement sleep disorder. And it's basically what we refer to as a parasomnia. These are people that have dreams, but they actually frequently act out their dreams. They're moving in their sleep. Their dreams are realistic enough that their bodies are actually reacting.
Her husband taking the brunt of that.
And of course, you know, it can range anywhere from just little hand gestures to violent thrashing and punching and kicking and all sorts of stuff.
And
we call it, you know, REM sleep disorder, because we know that when their eyes are moving behind their lids is when they start doing this. And that's so it's kind of a simple observation that said, oops, when people are having dreams, their eyes are moving and, you know, they start kicking and moving and thrashing and so on. I'm not aware of a connection with Parkinson's disease, though. I need to.
Okay. Well, that's what she was told. You know, 80% chance if it's in 12 years. So I was concerned about that. And they're trying different medications because she doesn't sleep well and, you know, it affects her work and stuff. But I'm really concerned about that, you know, 12 years of an 80% chance, which seems high.
I just did a PubMed search real quick, and I'm not sure what paper the doc was looking at. The papers that I'm seeing here say that people with Parkinson's disorder, 33 to 46% of people with Parkinson's also have a REM sleep disorder. That doesn't necessarily mean that people with REM sleep disorder are going to get Parkinson's. What it says is people with Parkinson's have a high incidence of having REM sleep disorder. So, you know, you got a little different approach to that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of paging through here, study after study, from Michigan Medicine, papers in Nature, papers in Neurology. Let's see, here's one, Frontiers of Medicine. Let me see if I can get that. Actually, doesn't look like, I'm looking here at the papers that have associated pathologies associated with it, secondary RM and so on. I don't see anything, at least in this survey paper. This is a paper that basically looked at most of the papers published in the previous 10 years and kind of put them together and did a meta-analysis.
Okay.
And they're not talking about it leading to. They are talking about that, you know, it's most common in men. It's most common in people who have used antidepressants. It tends to be more common in people with lower socioeconomic situations or toxic environmental exposures. That is, people that do farming and mining and so on. Smoking, drinking, low physical activity, cardiovascular risk factors, diabetes, and psychosocial stress all seem to be implicated in raising the incidence, but I don't see anything about it leading to Parkinson's. That doesn't mean it's not true. It just means that these brief studies that I'm able to peruse here don't give me any answers. Okay?
Well, that makes me feel better because I've been, you know, really concerned about that aspect. So I will convey that to her, and that should, you know, help her feel a little bit more optimistic about what she's going through.
Okay. Yes,
I really appreciate it.
You might recommend too that there are people there. There's kind of an interesting study on what the article laughingly referred to as a sleep divorce, not a real divorce, but couples who do better if they're in separate beds or even in separate bedrooms, so that they both get a better night's sleep. So,
that makes sense.
You know, and if I were sleeping with somebody that was punching and thrashing in the night, I might want a separate bed.
Yeah, I think so. That would be good.
Yeah, he's a really patient guy.
Well, I understand. But if he's not getting a good night's sleep, he's not going to be as patient as he otherwise would be.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much for the clarification.
You're welcome, ma'am. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for the call, Ursula. Leading Edge Medicine will continue. We have calls from Jean, Gabriel, and Jim. We're going to talk about bioidentical hormones. More talk on rapamycin and high blood pressure in just a moment. Stay right there. This is Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon. We'll continue in a moment.
Living on love, buying on time. Without somebody, nothing ain't worth a dime. Just like an old-fashioned storybook rhyme. Living on love.
Living on time.
Living on love.
Living on love.
That's what it is. Living on love. Although, you know, as a father of nine through the decades.
Yes, you've had just a few kids.
I have indeed. And I have given all of my children the following advice. And I have to admit, they have all ignored me.
Wait a minute. You have a whole show of listeners calling wanting your advice. What is it with the kids?
What I told the kids is, if life puts you in a situation where you must choose between love and money, choose love. But the reality is, you will fall in love with someone you are dating, that you are close to physically and emotionally. And if you're only dating people that are going somewhere, you can end up with love and money. Mm. And love and money is better than either love or money.
Okay. Right. There you go. A little love advice.
Some love advice to my children.
So, there you go. Yes.
You know, because you will fall in love with someone you are dating.
There
so just choose the dates wisely before you fall in love.
Mm, this is good. Okay. Leading Edge Medicine and Love Advice from Dr. Jerry Mixon. And taking your calls, we are talking to Jean in Kirkland right now. Good morning, Jean. Welcome.
Good morning. Jean. Thank you. I have a simple question. I am in my early 90s, and I have been advised that I should not take identical hormones. What is your opinion?
Somebody has not read the literature. That's my opinion. You thought it was a simple question. You are wrong. It is a complex question. The fact is that it depends on which bioidentical hormones you are using and in what doses and for what purpose. Let's start off with bioidentical. Okay. When we refer to bioidentical hormones, we're talking about hormones that are exactly the same as your own body produced. That's what the bioidentical phrase means. It doesn't necessarily mean natural hormones. You know, I've had people tell me, oh, I'm using bioidentical. I'm using yam cream. I said, lady, you're not a yam.
True.
You need human-type hormones. Humans need human-type hormones. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess, there is no natural source for human hormones other than grinding up healthy young humans to get them.
Ooh, and that would not
and
be good.
There are some social, legal, ethical considerations to that.
Yes.
And so bioidentical human hormones have to be made in the laboratory. So they are not natural, even though they are bioidentical. So there's a difference. They have to be synthetic because there's no other source for human hormones other than humans or laboratories. Okay. So what we have to do is make the exact same hormones that your own body produced. And the fact is that as those hormone levels decline, most human beings decline with them. For instance, estrogen slows bone loss. It's also a very potent anti-inflammatory. So women who are using estrogens have a 40% reduction in heart attacks and strokes, a 42% reduction in colon cancer. They get 30% less breast cancer. They have half the amount of dementia that women that have never taken hormones at all. Women who have never had any hormone supplementation get on average 300 cases of breast cancer per 100,000 woman years. Okay. Women who use bioidentical testosterone for more than 5 years only get 50 cases per 100,000 woman
years.
Wow,
big difference.
We cut their risk of breast cancer from 300 to 50. That's a dramatic,
huge,
one-sixth as much breast cancer. Osteoporosis, the testosterone stimulates new bone growth. The estrogen slows bone loss. Women with low hormone levels get an increased risk of osteoporosis and fractures. So, you know, on the other hand, you've made it to 90.
Mm-hmm.
You sound like you're doing just fine. You know, I don't hear, at least in that brief inquiry, any evidence that you're suffering from dementia or significant cognitive decline. I obviously don't know anything about your bone, your skins, and your muscle mass. But, I have indeed started women on hormone replacement therapies. The oldest one I ever started was 98 years old when I started her. And it made a very dramatic improvement in her quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it all depends on what you're trying to accomplish and for whom and for what reasons.
Don't think there's any particular risk for starting it at an older age?
No, No. Again, assuming it's done properly. Somebody that really knows what they're doing and knows how to balance them properly. Ladies in your age group don't metabolize these hormones as quickly as younger women do. So your blood levels are going to be more volatile. They will rise faster, drop slower, and so you would need to be monitored more closely. For instance, if a doctor tells you, yes, I'm going to start you on hormones and I want to see you again next year, I'd run like the wind. Well, if you're in your 90s, you probably don't run like the wind, but run as quickly as you can to somebody that wants to monitor you at least every 2 to 3 months. Because at your age, your blood levels are going to be touchier. So you need somebody who's watching you closely and doing your blood levels frequently and making sure that you're carefully adjusted.
I see. Okay, thank you very much for the info.
You're welcome.
All right, thank you, Jean, for the call.
Good luck, Jean. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Headed to Covington, and Gabriel has a question for the doctor on Leading Edge Medicine. Good morning, Gabriel.
Good morning. I truly enjoy the show. But two brief questions is I'm going in for a shoulder replacement shoulder, and he cut me off all my supplements. Is rapamycin and metformin still okay to take, or should I stop that before the surgery?
Are you taking the metformin for diabetes or for longevity?
Longevity.
Okay, then I would not stop it. All right. There are some things that if you're going to have a surgical procedure, you do want to stop. For instance, you want to stop any omega-3s because omega-3s extend your bleeding time. Same thing with the polyphenols and still beans, things like rapamycin and so on. Resveratrol. These are things that inhibit blood clotting. And if they're doing joint surgery, they want their surgical field to be as dry as possible. And that's why they're telling you to stop your supplements. Okay. But the rapamycin and the metformin specifically should not cause problems.
Thank you so much, Doc. I appreciate the show.
You're welcome, sir. Take care. Bye-bye.
Great call. Thank you for it, Gabriel. And we have time for a couple more calls. We're going to get to Jim in just a moment. Let me give you that phone number so that if you'd like to call or talk with Dr. Mixon, here is that number, 800-465-8770. Jim is our next caller. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Dr. Nielsen. How are you?
I am well. How can I help, sir?
Okay. Dr. Nielsen, I've been listening to your program for many years.
Wonderful.
I admire your knowledge of medical field. I thank you very much for, the knowledge you provide to us. However, sometimes I feel that because I'm American Chinese, I feel that when you mention the Chinese politics, I feel that you are not that correct. But I admire you because you're a doctor. you are one of the best doctors who knows there are so many fields. I admire you because I thought, how come a doctor knows politics? philosophy, literature, Chinese culture, poems, and that's amazing, doctor. I really, really, really admire you.
Well, thank you, sir.
Okay.
That's amazing. His wife?
That's amazing. I don't see there is many Chinese American to call you, but I want you to remember that I've been you know, listening to your program every day. Not every day, every weekend. And I follow every step, every knowledge, every political point of view you made. I just feel you are very, very exceptional. So I am a Chinese American. So today, my question to you is, I have a high blood pressure problem for, you know, last maybe 20 years or whatever. I have been taking several medicines, but I have very strong side effects. I was wondering, can I take care of my high blood pressure problem without taking the Western medication, but just using quote-unquote traditional Chinese, you know, methods, or by eating some good food, veggies or whatever, to control my condition.
All right. Well, let's chat about that a little bit. Although, where are you from in China?
I'm from Manchuria.
Manchuria.
I know your wife is from China. I appreciate you. I listen to your story. I listened to your daughter's story. Last two or three programs. So, you know, I wish you the best. Thanks.
Well, thank you, sir. Yeah, we in fact keep an apartment in Chengdu. In fact, that my home in Chengdu, actually it's not my home, it's my wife's, was one of the ways
I
convinced...
Chengdu is a Sichuan province.
Yes,
I'm from Manchuria, close to Siberia.
yes. No, I'm aware. We've been way up in northern China where it was cold and very short days.
Very cold, doctor.
Yes,
very cold.
Absolutely.
Not that the experience you had in... Vietnam.
Quite different. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about blood pressure. I don't know if it would classify as Chinese culture, although to some extent. Chinese are especially Han Chinese, not all of the ethnic groups.
I'm not, Manchurian or the other 56 minorities
right.
in China.
Yes.
Oh, of course, you know, you have more than 56 minorities in America.
Yeah,
so
we certainly do.
we
are a mixture of the whole world who decided to come here.
You're the little growth. You're the entire world.
Yes, we are human. That's right. We are humanity mixed together here.
America is exceptional. Yeah.
The Chinese traditionally have been lean. You know, the number of fat Chinese has always been pretty small. Part of that has been cultural. Part of that has been genetics. But the lean Chinese are the only people I know on Earth that are susceptible to diabetes even when they're skinny. You know, Caucasians and African ancestry, we tend to become diabetic if we get seriously overweight. Han Chinese are susceptible to diabetes even when they're thin. Mm-hmm. So there are some significant, you know, racial differences in our disease susceptibility. Generally, staying lean, staying thin, lowers blood pressure. Being physically active lowers blood pressure. Your dietary choices can raise or lower blood pressure. So, yes, traditional means of being physically active, and that can be even modest amounts of physical activity such as Tai Chi, can help you to lower your blood pressure. And of course, Tai Chi, because it's very slow, controlled sorts of rhythmic motions that require a great deal of muscle control, and yet there's also a meditation aspect in which you are, you know, either repeating a particular mantra or listening to a rhythmic sort of music. These things can help lower blood pressure significantly. So, yes, for some people, blood pressure can be brought under control with lifestyle and meditation and physical conditioning. All of these things can help lower blood pressure. Now, whether it lowers your individual blood pressure enough without medications is a different question. But some of the more traditional plant-based foods, the brightly colored, the peppers, the squash, the radishes, these things that have nice color to the outer envelope, can help to lower blood pressure. They contain chemicals such as still beans and polyphenols that dilate blood vessels and allow the blood to flow through more copiously at lower pressures. So, I hope that answers your question enough. I don't know enough about, you know, Mongolian dietary practices and exercise practices to comment, since most of my Chinese friends are in central and southern China, not up in the north countries.
Okay. Well, doctor, you think that without taking Western medication, like, reduce, control the blood, high blood pressures, by using such like you just mentioned, that practice Tai Chi, I don't know what is it, you know.
All right.
Or, by eating some healthy veggies, like, I checked the Google saying that you eat more, proper onions or bananas or some other nuts, you can reduce your high, blood pressure.
Yes.
Is that
and especially
possible?
Especially the spicy foods, the foods that that have a strong taste, such as garlic, all tend to lower cholesterols and blood pressures. So, but once more, I'd say get yourself a good blood pressure cuff. They sell them at every drugstore, $30, $40. And check your pressures regularly, and then change your diet, increase your physical activity, make sure you stay lean, and see what happens to your blood pressure. If your pressure is coming down, that's good. If your pressure is not coming down, then you may need to get some Western medicines.
Okay. Well, I've been very, link or whatever, thing or whatever, by eating all the Chinese food. But I don't know why my, blood pressure is so high, because I don't know, maybe it's stress or whatever. So I don't believe that to continue to take Western, medication so that I can reduce my blood pressure, but I'm seeking other options.
The problem with high blood pressure is that it prematurely ages your blood vessels. High blood pressure puts you at risk of strokes and heart attacks and kidney failure. And so you do want to be cautious. So follow your blood pressure carefully and do whatever you have to do to keep it as low as practical. Okay.
Okay, Dr. Nielsen, I appreciate you. I love you and your wife and your 11 or 12 years older daughter. I follow your story. Right. I wish you the best in my life.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Oh, thank you, Jim, for the call. Time for one last call from Eatonville. We will have Chris on the line. Hi there, Chris. Good morning.
Hello, Chris.
Yes, hello there. Hi. I'm familiar with your methodology there. The clinic, I was a member at one time. I'm calling on behalf of someone else at this moment, a gal who's in her 70s, early 70s, who has hair loss. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering what could be responsible for premature hair loss?
Well, A, I would not call 70s premature. All right.
Okay.
50% of women have noticeable hair thinning by age 50. So, yeah. So at 70s, you know, it's clearly not premature. The fact is, it's probably pretty much on schedule. But if we're looking at the reasons for hair loss, hormonal imbalances, too much or too little thyroid, hyper or hypothyroidism will often cause hair loss. Poor protein absorptions. People who don't have enough stomach acid so that they don't absorb their proteins efficiently can have hair loss. High cortisol levels related to stress and anxiety, whether physical or emotional stressors, can cause hair loss. Viral infections such as COVID can cause hair loss. There's a whole lot of things that can trigger hair loss. And of course, there's also the genetic propensity, that some women have the same genome that men have and develop that androgenic sort of hair loss. Although in her 70s, mm-hmm. I suspect her androgen levels are pretty low. So hair loss is one of those things that really takes some investigation. We need to get involved and find out what's going on that's triggering the loss. And sometimes, of course, the intervention, assuming thyroid and cortisol levels and all those things are where they ought to be, and she's not suffering from androgenic alopecia, then sometimes simple things such as applying minoxidil foam. Minoxidil is a hair product that you can get in the drugstores. It runs about $10 a month, so it's not terribly expensive. You can get it in a foam that doesn't make the hair greasy, and you just kind of spray it on the scalp morning and evening when you get up or when she gets up and before she goes to bed. And, you know, if it has an androgenic component, that should get her within 3 to 4 months noticing some thickening of her hair.
I see. Okay. Well, very good. Appreciate that. She is a becoming a member of your program. So
well, good.
She could probably go over that with her doctor as well.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. On another
Absolutely.
Thought, on another thought, regarding the rifamycin,
yeah,
is another subject. Is that five? This person that called in earlier, he was taking 5 to 7 milligrams. Is that per day or per week?
No, per week. Once a week. Most rapamycin is dosed weekly. There are people that do it twice a week. There are people that do it every other week. You know, it's kind of interesting. Rapamycin is the only drug that has extended the lifespan of every animal species that's ever been tried on. The problem with it is we don't know what the best dose or frequency is for human beings. So we're making educated guesses. Yeah. So.
I see. Interesting. Well, very good.
Thank you for the call, sir.
Very good.
Yes, thank you, Chris.
Music says we got to go, unfortunately. But we'll be moving over to the other station for the next 2 hours.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. Wow, what a day. Constant phone calls from the minute you stepped in here. Dr. Mixon will return next week along with Dr. Umat. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and we invite you to call, make that appointment for the Heart Health Day coming up Thursday, May 9th. You don't want to miss out. You can go to Tacoma, Kirkland, or Linwood. Have a great rest of your weekend. Here's the phone number to call to make that appointment, 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. We'll see you next week. Enjoy your weekend.